Chapter 9. 5 out of 10. I was back at the station in Margrave by 8 a.m. Finley and I went into the interview room. I told him about Kleiner's son and the empty truck. We got it wrong. They're bringing something to the warehouse, not taking it away, I said. What time is Roscoe back? Picard needs her another day, Finley said. And we have a much bigger problem. Somebody is ahead of us. Stola's house and garage were burned down last night. Is Judy okay? I asked quickly. She's fine. She left the house on Wednesday. That's good. But we know that there was nothing in the garage, only empty boxes. So what were they trying to hide? I said. We should call KK immediately. He or she might be in danger. You ring the number and I'll guard the door, Finley said. I picked up the phone and called the number. It was answered by a woman in the office of Columbia University in New York. Do you have someone called KK there? I asked.
Yes, Kelvin Kelstein, the woman said. You're the second person this morning to ask that. A police officer from Atlanta came and asked me the same thing.
Did he meet Mr. Kelstein? I asked.
No, they're meeting for lunch at 1 o'clock, she said.
I need to speak to Mr. Kelstein immediately, I told her. It's very important. The line went quiet for a minute. Mr. Kelstein, I said, when he came on the line. My name is Jack Reacher, and I believe that you knew my brother. Joe was murdered on Friday, and you're in danger. The man who you're meeting for lunch isn't a police officer. Don't meet him. The man sounded worried.
I'm very sorry about your brother, he said. He was doing excellent work.
How did you know him? I asked.
I study counterfeiting, he said. I wrote a report for the Treasury. The biggest problem with making counterfeits is paper. The printing can be copied, but it's almost impossible to copy the paper.
I thanked him. Now, go somewhere safe and stay there, I told him.
You know, your brother was sorry that he didn't see you more, he said.
I put down the phone. Someone's visited Kelstein already. They have the paper from Joe's suit bag, I said to Finley. But how? Suddenly, I knew. Baker. He copied Joe's paper yesterday, and he made a copy for Teal, too. We've got to get out of here right now. Now we knew 5 out of the 10 people in the scam. Morrison, Teal, Kleiner and his son, and Baker. It was dangerous for Finley to go home, so he went out of town to a motel. But I wanted to stay in Margrave. I went for a drive in Roscoe's Chevrolet and parked for a while to sleep. It was more than 24 hours since I last slept. When it was dark, I drove back to the station and got into the Bentley. Around 10 p.m., someone knocked on the window. It was Baker.
Is Roscoe still in Atlanta?
His voice was friendly.
And where's Finley?
He's gone to Florida to check something, I said.
What's that?
Baker asked. He doesn't tell me anything. I just do what he tells me. Now he wants me to go up to Hubble's place to get some papers.
Then what? Are you going to Florida too?
No, I'm going to sleep at Hubble's place and send the papers to an address in Washington in the morning. Baker gave me a friendly smile, but I knew that it wasn't real. I parked the Bentley at Hubble's house, put on my jacket, and went in, using Charlie's keys. I turned on some lights. Then, I went outside and locked the front door. I hid behind some trees and waited. It was nearly midnight, and it was very dark. It started to rain heavily. I had the blackjack and the knife in my pockets. I didn't want to use the gun. It was too loud. Half an hour later, they came for me. The black truck stopped next to the Bentley. Kleiner's son got out, and then four more men. Two were carrying bags, and two carried guns. Kleiner's son went to the house with three of the men. One man stayed by the truck. He had his back to me. I pushed through the trees. The man by the truck couldn't hear me because of the rain. I thought about Joe's dead body, and I jumped out at the man, hitting him across his head with the blackjack. He fell to the ground like a tree. One down. I got the keys from their truck, put the blackjack in my jacket, and took out the knife. I went toward the house. The front door was broken, and I could hear the men upstairs. I waited just outside of the door. 5 minutes later, I heard one of them come into the hall and open the closet door. I went up behind him very quietly, put my arm round his neck, and cut it with the knife. Two down. I waited outside of the front door again, with the blackjack ready. 10 minutes later, two guys came out together. I hit out with the blackjack to take them both down in a single move. The first went down, but the blackjack missed the second guy's head. He fell to his knees and tried to get up. I hit him again. Four down. Kleiner's son was still in the house. I stepped inside and listened, but I couldn't hear anything. I waited outside, listening hard. Then, he came out the front door and walked round the side of the house toward the swimming pool. I followed him. He was standing next to the swimming pool, his back to me. He was the guy who kicked my brother's dead body, I was sure. I brought the blackjack down as hard as I could on his head. He turned quickly, pointing his gun at me, but I knocked it out of his hand. He stepped back, nearer the pool. I jumped at him, pushing him into the pool. We were both in the water, fighting. I fought on and on, until my hands were round his head, pushing it under the water. At last, he was gone. I got out of the pool and then pulled the heavy body out. My clothes were wet and cold, but now I had to clean up. First, I went inside to the kitchen and turned on the oven very low. I took off my jacket and put everything from the pockets into the oven to dry. Next, I went back to the pool, pulled Kleiner's son's body to the black truck, and put it inside. I looked at the other four dead men. I knew them all. The two warehouse gatemen and two police officers. They were with Baker and Stevenson when I was arrested at Eno's on Friday. I put them all in the truck, with their guns, their bags, and their knives. Then, I unlocked the garage with one of Charlie's keys.
Hubble's green Bentley was in there. I drove the black truck inside, locked it, locked the garage door, and threw away the truck key. Next, I went back inside the house and looked around, thinking hard about Hubble. I smiled when I saw pictures of the Beatles on the walls of the living room. There was a lot of Beatles music in the house, too. Then, I thought about Joe and his letters and numbers, and the last thing on the paper, Stoller's Garage. And suddenly, I knew something important. Joe wrote Stoller's, S-T-O-L-L-E-R-S apostrophe, not Stoller's, S-T-O-L-L-E-R apostrophe S. They didn't burn the parents' garage. They burned the son's garage. Someone made a mistake. Back in the kitchen, I took everything out of the oven and checked Joe's paper. It was dry, but the writing was gone. The paper was washed clean by the swimming pool water. It didn't matter. I knew what it said. And now I knew one more thing. I knew how they were getting the paper for the counterfeit dollars.